Thank you for listening to The Rest is History. For bonus episodes, early access, ad-free listening, and access to our chat community, sign up at restishistorypod.com. That's restishistorypod.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to The Rest is History, our very first on-location recording. And Tom Holland, with our unerring eye for glamour, we have chosen this fantastic spot.
It's literally a roundabout.
Yeah.
We're in the middle of a roundabout, but it's a distinguished roundabout because it's Trafalgar Square. You can hear the police going by.
Yeah, it's great you're shouting over the siren. That's how I like to think we'll
Confirming your darkest suspicions of London.
We're
standing beneath the statue of Charles I, which is London's oldest bronze statue.
It is.
And is in fact the centre of London, isn't it? Because this is where the Eleanor Cross used to stand.
Yeah. So the cross was taken down in 1647. So these were the crosses put up by Edward I in memory of his wife Eleanor of Castile. Yeah. And on this spot, we have this bronze statue of Charles I, which went up in 1633, so during his lifetime. So this isn't a statue commemorating someone who's dead, unlike most of the statues that we're going to be talking about today, because that's what we're doing, isn't it?
We're talking statues. So that's why we've come here. So obviously Trafalgar Square, got Charles I, but we've also got Nelson. We've got a load of generals who Ken Livingstone famously didn't know who they were and wanted to take them down. And then we may go down and look at Parliament Square and look at the statues there as well. Statues, obviously, a very hot button issue. So I think this is a perfect place to do our first on-the-spot broadcast.
And the question, Tom, keep or cancel? I think we should ask keep or cancel.
Yes, okay. So should we focus on Charles I?
Yeah, because art collector.
Because as you say, I mean, this was not intended to go up in a public space. So this was for a private garden.
Is that right?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
So it was one of Charles I's kind of big supporters. And then obviously the Civil War happened and Charles I had his head chopped off just down the road, actually, just down towards Whitehall. And so Parliament ordered this to be destroyed, but it got hidden. And then with the restoration in 1660, it went straight back up.
Yeah.
Got put in this place, I think, 1675 or something.
Yeah.
Something
and like looking down at the spot of his own death.
Yes.
Which is a sort of strange.
And also, of course, looking down towards Parliament where there is a statue of Oliver Cromwell.
Yeah, it's great that they're facing each other, isn't it?
It is. And obviously, we're going to be talking about whether it's right that statues of certain people should be up in.
Yes.
I've always felt that having a statue of Charles I at one end of Whitehall, the great avenue, the artery of power in London, and a statue of Cromwell at the other, is kind of the perfect compromise. It's the perfect way to memorialise
the Civil War. It's the physical embodiment of our podcast that said that everything was 17th century, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, it is.
That's what it is.
It is.
So come on, Tom, would you get rid? Would you keep? Or?
Oh, I'd definitely keep it.
Yeah,
but you'd have to keep Cromwell as well.
Well, we'll come to that. We will come to that because that's a bit more controversial.
But I think also Charles I is a great one to start with because, as you said, it's the oldest statue here, really.
Yeah.
And it focuses the question on why do statues exist? So the whole debate about, you know, what statues should we have? Should we have statues at all? It's not a given that statues stand. For the Middle Ages, 16th century, they didn't have statues like this. So why did they suddenly appear?
Okay.
And then going into the 19th century, into the 20th century, why is there a sudden glut? And I think that probably the best way to answer that is to go and look at another statue in Trafalgar Square, which is a statue of Charles's son, James II, which stands in front of the National Gallery and is a good deal less noisy. So let's go there.
Okay. So, Tom, we're approaching this next statue, which is one you're very keen on because I think it's going to fit your thesis, isn't it?
It does, which is why I wanted to bring you here.
I mean, as I approach, it's a Roman?
Well, it's James II.
Okay.
Son of Charles I,
yes.
Younger brother famously, of Charles II.
Famously kicked out in the Glorious Revolution of 1688.
So this is Grinling Gibbons, put up in 1686, 2 years before he got kicked out.
So he's only been king for a year.
it's not a memorial to a great king. But he's, as you say, dressed in Roman armor. He's got a cloak. He's got a cuirass. He's got the little thigh boots. And it focuses attention on the roots of this sudden mania for putting up statues. Because until this point, you're not putting up statues of kings.
Right. Which is why there aren't statues of Edward IV or Richard III. Or
There is supposedly an older statue, which is that of King Alfred, which is said to have been sculpted in the reign of Richard II, put up in Westminster and then moved to Southwark. But actually, it's pretty clear it's Victorian.
Okay.
I think there's a portrait bust of Elizabeth I on St. Dunstan's on Fleet Street. But aside from that, it's really here that it begins.
Charles and James, yeah.
And the fact that he's in Roman dress shows that what's going on here is an attempt to ape and mimic
Roman
styles. And it's in Greece and Rome that you put up statues of emperors, obviously, but also great men.
Yeah.
Because it's the best way to memorialize them. You don't have photographs, you don't have other ways of preserving their memory. So you put the statues up. Why are there no statues in the Middle Ages? Because they've fallen out of habit with the fall of the Roman Empire, but also with the, and you will know what I'm about to say.
It's Christianity.
The coming of Christianity. Yep. So there is, Christianity brings a deep anxiety about graven images. So you will get
statues of saints.
You will get statues of saints and you'll get statues of biblical kings. And on tombs, of course, you get images of kings and of knights and of effigies. But you don't get standalone statues like this. And really, this is an importation from Renaissance Italy.
But is it also, I mean, he's famously an absolutist, an admirer of European absolutism. So putting up the statue is quite a strong symbol, isn't it? You know, I'm a Roman emperor. Going to be an absolute. And I mean, the inscription's in Latin. Jacobus Secundus Dei Gratia, by the grace of God.
King of England, Scotland, France.
He's still claiming
Ireland.
France at this stage, which I like.
And Fidei Defensor, and defender of the faith, even though he's Catholic.
He could justifiably claim that, and nobody else could, because it was a title awarded to Henry VIII when he was a Catholic.
So essentially, the tradition of putting up statues is a culturally contingent one.
Yeah.
That is bred of Renaissance and then early modern responses to the Roman heritage.
Yeah, okay.
And it exists in tension with the older Christian suspicion of graven images.
But
I think that is something that we see right the way up to the present day.
But Tom, here's the thing. We were talking about the Keep or Cancel. I mean, he's somebody who was cancelled.
He was cancelled.
He was kicked out of the country.
And this statue got taken down.
I did. Okay, yeah, that's what I was going to ask. And so when did it come back up? Do you know?
I think it got taken down on the orders of William, and then I think William gave it, said, fine, put it back up again. Essentially because, of course, this is in the context of the execution of Charles I and the abolition of the monarchy.
Yeah.
So there's a nervousness about cancelling a king.
Okay.
And I think that's also the other thing is that in the 17th century, when you're putting up statues of kings, you're also putting up images of the idea of monarchy and of the idea of the kingdom that he's ruling. So that's the list of all the kingdoms that you get on the base of the statue. This is an image, not just of James, but of the imperial power of the British monarchy.
But here's the thing, Tom. A big theme that runs through this whole statue debate is, you know, you're commemorating people, you're enshrining them, you're indoctrinating the public in, you know, in what they represent. And we've been standing here now for, what, 4 minutes or something? And, you know, quite a few people, it's quieter than usual, but quite a few people have walked past. They've looked at us and thought, who are these freaks in holding microphones and talking to each other? But nobody has looked at that statue. I mean, it's just, to most people, it's just a piece of decorative art, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. That of course, is the issue for Ken Livingstone, who I think in 2000, when he was mayor of London,
he wanted to get rid of
two other statues.
Well, we'll come down to them, because I love those statues.
Yes. But also, I think while we're on the theme of Romans and aping Rome, it would be obvious to look at the most obvious Roman monument in Trafalgar Square, which is the Triumphal Column, which is surmounted by Nelson.
Yes.
Because the idea of erecting a massive phallic column to victory is a paradigmatically Roman one.
Yeah.
The debate over Nelson, so I think Aphil Hirsch recently suggested that Nelson should fall. They're obviously kind of, you know, this is an ancient debate. So this, in Rome, you have Trajan's Column, which is erected to celebrate Trajan's victories over the Dacians, and was surmounted by a statue of Trajan. That statue kind of vanished, came down some point in the Middle Ages, and was replaced by a statue of St. Peter. And the current debate about whether we should pull down the statue, say, of imperial generals and yeah. replace them with somebody more in tune with the spirit of the age, it's a replication of what happened with Trajan and St. Peter.
It's an old
debate.
So do you want to do Nelson next, or do you want to do the intervening statues? What should we do?
Let's go and look at Nelson and then look at the ones who flank him.
So the Nelson one, we can probably carry on talking as we walk towards it. So the Nelson one, it's much later, actually, than I thought. So it's 1840s. So it's not put up in the immediate aftermath of his death. I think the Duke of Wellington backed an appeal. So there was, like a lot of these statues, there was a big sort of public subscription. And yet, the irony is, of course, he's on this statue and he's towering over it. But Nelson was a very short man. So this is you could argue it's a sort of massive act of compensation. Because I think he was 5'6". And apparently he's not wearing his eye patch on the top.
Is he not? But his arm is missing.
Yeah, but his arm is missing, exactly. So Tom, I mean, most of our listeners will probably already know that for British listeners anyway, Nelson is one of the absolute titanic figures. He's the hero of Trafalgar. Certainly I was brought up as a boy thinking that Nelson was one of the absolutely untouchable, heroic figures of British history.
Well, it's Trafalgar Square. So it's put up in the aftermath of his death at the Battle of Trafalgar, which essentially ensures that France can't invade Britain and establishes the supremacy of the Royal Navy for, you know, a century and more.
Yeah.
So it's, in that sense, it's different to the statues of Charles I and James II, because this is consciously a monument to victory.
Yeah, it's a monument
to British greatness.
Yeah, it is, exactly.
And again, that is very, very powerfully in the Roman tradition. And I guess that's what now makes people slightly uncomfortable.
But then the statue of Nelson is also different from the first two we talked about, and it is, you know, people queue up to have their photos taken on the steps, don't they? I mean, maybe not because they love Nelson.
And straddling the lions.
But because they're aware of it as a sort of icon of Britishness.
Yes.
So I think, am I not right in thinking that at the Olympic opening ceremony, when Daniel Craig and the Queen fly past in a helicopter, they fly past Nelson, and I can't remember what he sort of looks up at them or raises his hat or gives a little wink or something.
There are kind of bronze images that attach to the base of the column.
Scenes from the battle.
Scenes from four battles. Yeah. Yeah. Made from melted iron of French cannon.
And the one on the side facing towards Whitehall is a Trafalgar, and it shows one of the people firing a gun is a black sailor, a man whose name was, I've got it written down, his name was George Ryan, age 23, shooting a musket.
Really?
So it's sort of there's a bit of nice multiculturalism there.
well, maybe that'll preserve it.
But of course, Nelson is now controversial because people argue about his relationship to slavery.
Yes.
There's this letter where he's supposedly defending slaving interests, which I think the consensus now seems to be the letter's a forgery.
Yeah.
And it's forged after his death by anti-abolitionists who wanted to claim Nelson's support for their cause. Though the jury is still slightly out on that. But yes, if you want to, Nelson's one of the two people that if you want to be very iconoclastic, you say, tear Churchill down and tear Nelson down. And the Nelson thing, you know, lots of people, including me, got very sort of excited about that, hot under the collar, because Nelson is seen as synonymous with Britain and Britishness and British pride and all
this
stuff.
He's also a kind of dashing flamboyant character.
Yeah.
So he has all kinds of shenanigans with Emma Hamilton.
Suffered very badly from diarrhea, Nelson.
Thank you, Dominic, for someone who's supposed to be batting for the British heroes.
I forgot what side I'm on, sorry.
Yeah, get back on side.
He's a very charismatic figure, Nelson.
Very charismatic figure.
So, I mean, he's actually not quite Churchillian in that he had colossal flaws.
But people loved him for his flaws, I think.
Yeah, agreed. So you wouldn't take Nelson down, would you? I mean, come on.
I wouldn't take Nelson down because I think that... I think that for as long as the French have the Arc de Triomphe...
Yeah, we've got to have
We
Nelson.
Have the right to have Nelson's column.
When they take Arc de Triomphe down, we'll maybe think about...
And also, it's kind of... Hitler,
disarming.
I think Hitler was planning to... if he occupied Britain, he was planning to take Nelson's column to Berlin as a kind of victory totem.
Oh, that would have been awful. And the lions.
So in a way...
The lions are symbols of Britishness, aren't they, I suppose?
Yeah.
But
it's a symbol of, you know, of a battle that saved Britain from,
yeah,
from what I think would have been a fairly unpleasant occupation.
Gallic occupation. No one would want that.
No one would want that. So I'm in favour of keeping him.
Let's keep him. Very good. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. All right, Tom. So what next? What do you got next?
So it's around, famously, Trafalgar Square has four plinths. One of them is occupied by a king, so like Charles the First, like James the Second, and that is George the Fourth, who is almost universally recognised to have been one of our worst kings.
I've got some good facts about George the Fourth, especially for this podcast.
Do you want to give them?
I do.
He was very fat.
Do you know what he had for breakfast?
A lot.
The Duke of Wellington wrote that in 1830 he had for breakfast a pigeon and beefsteak pie, three parts of a bottle of Moselle, a glass of dry champagne, two glasses of port, and a glass of brandy, followed by a large dose of laudanum.
I think, don't you think that's the kind of breakfast that needs to be memorialised in our...
Yeah, I mean, I admire him. But the other thing is, he was so fat, he weighed 20 stone. I mean, that man on that horse is not 20 stone.
And he ended up thinking that he'd led the charge at Waterloo or something.
I think he'd gone completely mad at the end. But it was so... So David Wilkie said he was so obese, he looked like, quote, a great sausage stuffed into the covering.
Well, I think
he doesn't look like that, does he?
So, I mean, a completely worthless king.
Yeah. But actually, you know what? What's great is that we've done three pretty worthless kings.
Yeah. They're all, I mean, really useless kings.
I mean, that's why I think
two of them, one of them got executed, one of them got driven into exile, and one of them ended up looking like a sausage meat.
Yeah. So I think only in Britain, I don't know, would we have
three worthless
awful
kings
memorialized in our sort of most famous square. So, yeah, George the Fourth. The producer is saying tell everybody his dates, and I think we should. So he's early 19th century, isn't he? He's the regent. He's the regent for George the Third when
Dominic,
he goes mad.
When does he die?
He dies in 1830, something like that.
Something like that.
Ted Valance, we had on to talk about Magna Carta, and he didn't know King John's date, so I think I can be excused not knowing.
Right, so that's George the Fourth done with impressive scholarship and learning.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are getting a lot from this podcast, aren't
and then
they?
we've got two generals that we'll come to, and then we've got the fourth plinth, which has famously been kept empty.
Okay, so the two generals, Ken Livingstone, when he was mayor of London, said, "Let's tear them down. No one knows who they are. They're not relevant." That was
but
his
as
claim.
I remember, he wanted to bring them down not because they were imperialists, but because he didn't know who
they were.
Yeah,
so he said, "Oh, they're just ghastly old generals." So this one. Charles James Napier. I'm almost tempted to ask the producer if he knows anything about it. He's shaking his head.
Jack, do you know who Charles nose.
James Napier was? No.
He's got a really good... He's got a Wellington-style nose.
He does. He looks very impressive. He's got a nice sword.
Great boots.
So he is the man who conquered Sindh in what's Pakistan in the 1840s.
I have sinned, which in Latin is peccavi, so which he's supposed to have sent, but he didn't because it was a joke in Punch.
Yeah, but it's a great story that they sent this message home, peccavi, I have sinned, but he didn't. It's so disappointing.
But he was a war hero in Peninsula War, I think.
Yeah, before that's right. But he did not deny that the conquest of Sindh, so it's erected by public subscription. The most numerous contributors being private soldiers. Isn't that touching?
Very touching.
But he didn't deny that the conquest of Sindh had been a
rascally business.
A rascally business. Yeah. He said, our object in conquering India, the object of all our cruelties, do you know what it was?
Money.
Money. Money is what he says. Yeah. Every shilling of this has been picked out of blood, wiped and put into the murderer's pocket.
And
we shall yet suffer for the crime as sure as there is a God in heaven.
Yes. And he also, he kind of basically foretold
The rebellion
in 1857.
Yeah.
And worried that British officers and Indian officers weren't kind of mixing.
Yeah.
So in a way, I mean, to the degree that Victorian generals are woke, he's a woke Victorian general. Would you say?
Well, he sort of has his cake and eats it, doesn't he? I mean,
he conquers it, but says it's a crime.
He kills everybody and takes all the money and then says, oh, I'm actually a very kind person. I feel really bad about it.
But isn't that Britain generally?
Yeah,
that's us generally. So would you cancel him or?
Well, I wouldn't cancel him. I mean, I wouldn't cancel anybody. Well, I might cancel someone when we get later on. Right, I've got a few up my sleeve I might cancel just to annoy the listeners.
I dread to think.
Would you keep him? Would you? I mean, you're more woke than I am, so maybe you would.
I'm not massively woke.
Would you like to see a crane pulling him down?
The truth is, I don't really care. I don't feel strongly about it one way or the other. I'm inherently quite conservative.
Yeah.
In that I don't like repainting our sitting room. Right. Whereas my wife is always repainting the sitting room.
That's exactly the analogy that you should be
using.
So
whenever
for.
She does it, I always think, yeah, that's brilliant. It's worth the hassle.
Right.
But left to me, I wouldn't do it. But if they want, you know, if they came up with some amazing new scheme, I'm sure I'd be happy. However, having said that, two things against that. One is this thing, it's erected by public subscription. Yeah. So I do kind of think that if something's been erected by public subscription, in a way you kind of have a duty to honor that. I also think that like a building. Reminds you of a particular moment in history.
Completely.
And also, I'm not confident in our ability to replace it with something better.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is that I look at the fourth plinth, which has been kept empty for long, and now is put up for public subscription. And there's a kind of melting ice cream and a fly and a cherry and things.
It's not great, is it?
And, well, I mean, the idea of putting up something kind of edgy was, you know, I mean, it was edgy the first time,
but it
just goes round and round. And so now it's very conventional. So in a way, the edgiest thing that you could do would perhaps be to put up a statue of
another general
or an admiral or something.
Yeah, that would be a brave statement.
So
I think we should take a break.
Yes.
And then let's return to this issue as we walk to the other Victorian general.
Okay.
All right. See you after the break.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, former White House Director of Communications and Wall Street financier.
And I'm Katty Kay, U.S. Special Correspondent for BBC Studios. I've been covering American politics for almost three decades.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics U.S., brought to you by Goalhanger.
Go on, tell us, were those donations you made, like Obama in 2008, was that idealism? Were you hoping to get something out of these campaigns that would serve your own business interests, for example?
So I think this will either make this podcast incredibly successful, Katty, or people will be horrified and they'll shut it off right now, because I'm going to be very real with you. The Obama donation, I had gone to law school with President Obama. We were not classmates. I was a few years ahead of him. It was 2007. He was then Senator Obama. I had a check in my breast pocket. I went over to the senator. I said, Senator, I said, you and I didn't really know each other in law school, but I'm about to hand you a big check. Can I lie to my friends and tell them that you and I knew each other in law school? Well, Obama looks at me, had the best smile in American politics since Jack Kennedy.
Forever.
Yeah. He lights up. He looks at me and says, I'll tell you what, if you double the amount of the check, we'll take it back to Hawaii. Okay. And I looked at him. I said, you're done. I had another check in my pocket. I ripped it up. I doubled the amount of the check. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've been to more White House Christmas parties during the Obama administration than the Trump administration.
In this pivotal year for the United States, democracy, and world affairs, Britain's biggest podcast, The Rest is Politics, is launching Stateside.
Uncovering secrets from inside the Biden and Trump inner circles and how they shape the world's most important economy, but also the global economy too.
New episodes are released every Friday morning.
Just search The Rest is Politics US wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Rest is History. We are talking statues. We're here in Trafalgar Square. And we have moved on to Ken Livingstone's second target, as it was 20 years ago, Major General Sir Henry Havelock.
KCB.
KCB. And his brave companions in arms during the campaign in India, 1857. So this is during the rebellion that you were talking about, which used to be called the Indian Mutiny. And there's a nice quote from Havelock. Soldiers, your labors, your privations, your sufferings, and your valor will not be forgotten by a grateful country. And again, erected by public subscription. So again, you know, you could, to me, Tom, this spot that we're on is a piece of Victorian Britain. We're, you know, this is, you get a sense by being here, which you wouldn't get if it were removed, of the sensibility of the age.
You do. And Havelock was a morally serious figure. So he was a Baptist who made all his soldiers do Bible classes and performed heroically in the campaign in India. I think ended up dying in Lucknow.
He died of dysentery.
Died of dysentery. So again,
diarrhea is a big theme in in history.
The flow of...
Yeah, the flow.
The flow
exactly,
of shit, which is a...
But Tom, obviously now the Indian Mutiny, as it was once called, the Rebellion, is now itself very controversial. Right.
So this is the tension. So it's, as you say, erected by public subscription. It absolutely, this is in a way a kind of, it's the equivalent of news archive. It's news footage from the 19th century. We don't have anything comparable to that. So if you want to have a feeling of that, of what it was like in the middle of the Victorian period, this is a place to come. Absolutely.
Yeah. Our producer was saying to me, it's not relevant. But I mean, you make that case about any historic artifact, I would argue, or historic building, that they're not, in inverted commas, relevant. I mean, clearly it's not relevant, but that's, to me, what's valuable about it.
There is there are two counter-arguments to keeping it. One is that we have taken statues down from Trafalgar Square before. So you know who was here in the 19th century but got removed? Is Edward Jenner.
Really?
So we've kept the generals, but we've removed the guy who pushed for vaccinations. So
why was he taken down?
I think he was taken down late 19th century.
Right.
So I'd actually be all in favour of replacing Sir Henry Havelock.
But surely
moving Henry, I think Jenner got moved
to the fourth plinth. Put him on the fourth plinth.
Yeah. Well, I think that it would be nice to bring Jenner back, particularly after the past year, and put him back in Trafalgar Square. I'd be in favour of that. And the other issue is that when this got put up, there were no people really from India in Britain.
Yeah.
So this was a us and them situation in the mid 19th century. That's not the case. And if there are people of Indian descent who are Londoners, who are British, who are walking past, who find this upsetting, then I don't think it's worth keeping him.
But when you get down to Parliament Square, you're going to be making that same argument about Cromwell and all the Irish people in Britain.
Well, we'll come to that.
Which is what people made in the 19th century.
We'll come to that. But okay. I think that it's not for me to say. I don't really care.
Well, if you're going to take him down, it's definitely not for you to say. I mean, I think we can agree about that.
Well, I would take him down and replace him with Jenner.
Okay.
Would be mine. So I'm going to cancel him.
Well.
But you're not.
I put Jenner on the fourth plinth. I'm sick of the modern art on the fourth plinth.
I'm sick of the modern art. It's not clever and it's not grown up.
Yeah. Now let's walk over to, there's an interesting statue here over this side, which I might cancel.
So a controversial, who I think should go on the fourth plinth, an equestrian statue of Elizabeth II.
Oh, he's such a monarchist.
No.
Are you hoping for, does the Queen listen? Are you hoping for recognition?
But I think that it would be in tune with the traditions of the square.
Okay.
Because this is...
What about Prince Philip?
No, because he's not a king.
Make up for his disappointments in the World Cup of Clubs.
Well, maybe. Maybe. I think it's...
Sir Tom Holland here.
It's meant for an equestrian statue. Let's put a monarch up.
Sir Tom
That's
Holland.
That's what it's for.
Decorated for...
But I'm only saying that.
Services to royal podcasting.
I'm saying that to be edgy.
Is that edgy?
Yes. It's the edgiest thing you can say. And it would be...
It would be the first one.
Exactly.
It would be the first one. I beat you to it. So we've got three busts here where there's someone doing some drilling. So we probably shouldn't go too close.
It's the Lady of Admirals.
Those are admirals. These are World War admirals. So Jellicoe and Beatty, who actually hated each other from World War One, and then Admiral Cunningham from World War II. Do you know a fact about General Cunningham's bust?
Is he the one who was called Mary?
I didn't know that, but that's a very good fact.
And so he had a bust as well. He was called Mary and he had a bust.
Yeah. So,
well, we should definitely keep him
in this bust of Admiral Cunningham. There is an empty bottle of Guinness, drunk by the sculptor and used as a sort of centerpiece of the bus. Now, obviously, nobody would cancel them, presumably. I mean, they helped to win the World Wars, surely. You wouldn't get rid of them, would you, Tom?
No, I'll keep them.
And actually, there's a man drilling, so we can't say any more about them because we don't want the drilling to overpower your dulcet tones.
So, and also, it's nice to have someone called Mary.
Yeah. So there's your female
component
of the square.
Okay, so we are now heading back up to the National Gallery, and we're going to look at someone who I suspect, Dominic, you do think should be cancelled.
Definitely. There's two things I really, as you know, Tom, I'm a very passionate anti-slavery person, And also, I'm very passionate about people paying their taxes.
Yes.
So any sort of tax dodger.
Tax dodging slave owner.
Right. I think would think absolutely not belong here. And as, especially if they dress up with a symbol of Italian fascism, which would be awful.
And here, so a slave owning, tax dodging person with a symbol of fascism.
Yeah. And here we are in front of, now Tom, who's this?
It's George Washington.
It is. Presented to the people of Great Britain and Ireland by the Commonwealth of Virginia in 1921. So here's George Washington. So this is clearly a gift, I think, post-World War One. You know, we fought together in World War One.
Yeah.
Commonwealth of Virginia has given this copy of the original, which is one of the most famous statues of Washington, which I think stands in the Virginia State House. It's a nice symbol of Anglo-American amity. Would you keep or get rid? So Washington's coming down in America. That's the thing. A lot of Americans are getting rid of Washington.
Isn't the story that it's American soil?
Apparently, because he said he would never set foot again on the soil of London. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that.
So yes, there's a claim that he's actually on American soil.
Again, I have no strong feelings.
Tell me about the rods. The fasces.
The fasces. So those are the symbols borne by the lictors, who are the bodyguards of the Roman magistrates, which then got used by Mussolini as the symbol of his movement at much the same time as the statue was donated.
But this, what's nice about this though, Tom, is it completes the loop, doesn't it, with the Roman connotations of Charles and James.
Yes, and it's a reminder of the fact that George Washington was born a British subject.
Yes.
So in a way, you know, he does rank as a great Briton, I guess.
I mean, I wouldn't really get rid of him because I think it's magnanimous of us to have him. Don't you?
I think it is. Yes, it is. It's, a tribute to our sporting ability to accept a defeat.
Yeah, sports, good sportsmanship. Yes. Now, we haven't had any women other than your references to your putative statue of the Queen, your knighthood statue, as I call it. So I think if we go around the corner, there's a very good statue of a woman, and one that I don't think anyone in their right mind would want to. Well, although, having said that, a columnist in The Guardian, Gary Young, wrote a very passionately argued long essay arguing that all statues, you should be consistent and you should get rid of all statues. What did you make of that?
I thought it was a brilliant essay, and I thought its argument that every statue should be brought down. So he listed people he didn't approve of, and then he listed people he did approve of, and he said that they should all come down.
Yeah. He just didn't believe in statues, in memorializing people in stone as a sort of oppressive, you know, reminder of history.
Well, essentially, I mean, it was an anxiety about graven images. Serving the graven images threatened the moral health of the people.
Yeah,
and
that's a very old theme. And a gift to you. And a gift to you. You must have been delighted when you saw that.
I was so excited because essentially it's Protestantism redux. It's the Reformation at its most passionate and absolutist. And I thought, you know, it had the massive benefit of being consistent and brutally honest.
But
and it did recognize the fact that statues are not a given, that it's perfectly possible to have cities without statues.
But Thomas, people said, you know, you're going to have a hard job persuading, you know, Stoke City supporters to get rid of the statue of Stanley Matthews. Or my team, Wolves, we have statues of Stan Cullis, Billy Wright and Sir Jack Haywood, which mean a lot to Wolves fans. They're a symbol of our...
They're idolatry.
Well, we're not worshipping them.
Yeah, you kind of are.
Well,
and also,
maybe.
And also, the fact that anyone, you know, the whole argument about statues is, well, they were people of their time.
Yeah.
So even Stanley Matthews probably had not entirely constructed views about gender relations or
British
Empire or whatever.
Everybody did.
So I mean, you'll always be able to find a reason.
By definition, I mean, this is probably Gary Young's anxiety that by definition, everybody who in the past will be wrong, right?
But that's why it's fundamentally theological, because essentially he's saying that all human beings are fallen,
yeah,
and therefore you shouldn't make idols of them.
That would make us unique, of course, in the Western world in not having statues if we did get rid of all our statues. And obviously we were not going to, so...
It's not going to happen, yeah. But as an argument, it was kind of bracing.
We are now here, probably the last statue of this bit of the podcast, do you think? And this is Edith Cavell. So this is the nurse who was shot at dawn on October the 12th, 1915, by the Germans She'd been helping Allied servicemen trapped behind the enemy lines in the Western Front to escape. She was shot, I think, for as a traitor. She'd been a nurse, a Red Cross nurse, and she had sort of dishonored her calling in the Germans' eyes by working with the Allies. There was a huge international scandal. The Americans begged her not to do it. She had there's all kinds of state memorials in Britain. And what I also like, I mean, it's a very sort of progressive memorial in a way, because you've got this statue of her looking like a sort of Mary Poppins-ish figure, and words like humanity and
cool,
sacrifice.
Cool, the midwife vibe.
Very cool, the midwife, actually.
Yeah.
But then you have the utter contradiction of the two inscriptions.
Yes.
So at the bottom it says, her famous quote, which she says before she dies, "Patriotism is not enough. I must have no hatred or bitterness for anyone." And then at the top, Tom?
"For king and country."
"Patriotism is not enough."
Yeah.
So the two are slightly at odds with each other, aren't they?
Maybe that's the solution with statues, is to put two totally conflicting messages.
Yeah, maybe.
So, which in a way is, you know, it's the pairing of Charles I and Cromwell again. It's
yes, I suppose
that,
so.
That maybe you have to accept that no one statue is sufficient to embody an entire message, that it can only exist in tension with something else.
Statues always have multiple meanings, don't they? I mean, they can have. So those statues of Napier and Havelock, I mean, you could see them as memorials of what Britain did wrong if they were that way inclined, couldn't you? You could see
absolutely,
them as
yes.
emblems of sin. You don't have to see them as emblems of sainthood. I mean, obviously, Edith Cavell, she's a saint here, right?
Yeah.
And she's the only person, I think, in this, apart from possibly Charles I, although only subsequently after his death, but she's the only person who's here because she's a martyr, a victim. The others are people who, you know, generally killed other people, whereas she's here because she was shot.
Yeah.
So, and that, she, dare well, I say, and so, this is quite a Christian statue.
It is. And I think that when we go on to do our second episode, when we will go down Whitehall, get to Parliament Square. Of course, on Parliament Square, you also have Westminster Abbey. And Westminster Abbey has 10 statues to martyrs there.
Yeah.
Which, again, kind of provides a... maybe a counterpoint to the braggadocio of the statues that you get there. So,
okay, well, that's a good note on which to end, I think. I don't think we've...
we're not going to cancel Edith Cavell, are we?
No, we're not going to cancel her. I think, did we agree with cancel George Washington? No, I think we agreed to spare him.
Well, I think if they decide to cancel him in America, I think we should. I think that
I
would...
Think so. No, yeah. I think...
You think... Yeah, hold out against Americanization.
Be good for tourism, actually, wouldn't it? All the George Washington fans would come over here. Anyway, on that note, I mean, on that incredibly powerful and insightful note, I think we should call it a day. And we will return in our next podcast with more
statues. More statues.
Yeah, more statue mongering. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Rest is History. For bonus episodes, early access, ad-free listening, and access to our chat community, please sign up at restishistorypod.com. That's restishistorypod.com.